Welcome to the best of Connecting Faith. This is a previously aired Encore presentation.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello and welcome to Connecting Faith. So glad to have you tuned in today, and a very special salute to you who have worn the uniform of our armed forces and the families that have supported them, and maybe one of your family members has paid the ultimate sacrifice. And we want to say we honor you, we thank you for your service, and we want to encourage you to stay tuned for today's program, because I think it will be an encouragement to all of us, whether we have served in the military or not, because we'll find out that there's some important parallels in things we can learn from particularly those that are in the Airborne Ranger unit. And for that, we're going to focus on a wonderful new book, by the way, which we have some giveaway copies of. And so we'll tell you about, you know, signing up for that. We'll do a drawing here at the end of the show. And you can go to our website to get details on that. But the book we're going to reference today is called Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger: Find Your Purpose Following the Warrior Christ. And it's written by my guest today. Captain John McDougall is a U.S. Army chaplain and a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan. Graduated from West Point in 2000, he served over 10 years in airborne and ranger assignments, including the 173rd Airborne Brigade and the 82nd Airborne Division and the 75th Ranger Regiment. And he was inspired to write Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger while returning from a training mission with his Rangers. And we'll find out a little bit more about that. And we're actually talking to him from the base in Afghanistan. And Captain McDougall, it's an honor to talk with you today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you too, Neil.
So this kind of came to you, right? The idea that Jesus was an airborne ranger as you were on a training assignment with your fellow Rangers, right?
That's right. We were training in Eastern Washington. We were in Yakima, Washington, and I was driving back over the pass, headed back to the Seattle-Tacoma area where we were stationed. And I started thinking about my guys and thanking God for keeping them safe in the mission, and I was praying, God, they don't realize how much like you they are, how close to faith they are, how sacrificial they are, how their lives are focused on service, just like yours was. And then all of a sudden, God just kind of hit me with all these ways in which our Savior resembled the Rangers. And in fact, the ideas came so quickly, Neil, that I nearly pulled over to write them all down. But I had a sleeping pastor in the car, so I pressed on. Got home that night, wrote out a quick outline, and promised God that on the next deployment, as I headed back to Afghanistan, I would fill out that outline. I would work on the book.
It's a wonderful read, and I know you're going to enjoy it, especially if you have anyone in the military. But I think if you just want to understand more about, you know, Jesus' character and characteristics, you'll be encouraged by this. It's from Multnomah. It's called Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger, and Chaplain John McDougall, my guest today. So did Jesus become more appealing to you and maybe the men you served with the more you kind of reflected and studied his characteristics, his strategy in reaching the world?
I think certainly the men I serve with, I've been a Christian from my youth, but I do think that there is an element missing. There is a sort of almost a hollowness to Jesus, certainly a holiness. But there was a sense in which I couldn't relate to him completely. He was almost too good, too unrealistic for many of us to understand. And I think as I started to dive into this and realize the warrior element in who Christ is, he did come alive to me. And as I shared these ideas with my Rangers, as I shared them in devotionals or in sermons, the guys would stop me afterwards and say, "Sir, how come nobody ever told us this before? How come nobody presented Jesus as a soldier before?" And I certainly think that led to this, to God inspiring me to write this book.
Well, you know, the church probably has lost a bit of his of its battle imagery, hasn't it, since maybe the Middle Ages? I mean, the idea of you know, Christ as victor or Christ the conqueror, we don't really talk about that so much, it seems.
We don't. Every once in a while, it peaks up maybe in a song or two, but it really has lost its focus. You know, I think, of course, of Martin Luther's famous hymn, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," and it's full of battle imagery. But yeah, since then, I think war has kind of become something ugly, something undesirable. Certainly it is. But I think God understands that the only thing worse than war is for evil to go unchecked. And so I think he understands that there is a place for conflict when good, as Jesus did, come to the earth to defeat sin and evil, to conquer death. And I think that sort of imagery has been lost, absolutely.
It's interesting you talk about evil unchecked. I mean, that you know, the major conflicts of the world, of which you are, you know, in the middle of, religion is sort of used as a motivating concept. And, you know, it seems like maybe our government and society in general have been kind of slow to recognize that or even to sort of label it. But you you see it kind of up close and personal, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to be careful. I'm not advocating for a holy war. I'm not advocating for Christians to take up arms and kill those who are opposed to us, maybe a bit like our enemy does. But I do think it's important that we understand that we are in a battle. That battle may be mostly spiritual, but it's certainly, you know, Paul says in Ephesians 6, we do not battle against flesh and blood, but against spirits and principalities and powers. And I think that's important for us to recognize. But yeah, it does play out on a national, international level as well.
So let's talk about what's unique about being an airborne ranger, maybe rather than an infantry soldier, for example, and maybe just share a little bit about your journey, you know, from pursuing this this trek.
Sure. Well, airborne rangers are designed to move behind enemy lines. If we remember the wars of World War II and some of the parachute assaults that were conducted then, you know, an airborne soldier jumps behind enemy lines and then disrupts the enemy from behind, whereas an infantry soldier, you know, stays on those front lines and tries to penetrate from the front. So I think it's important, and the ranger idea, maybe divorced from the airborne, is the idea of raids, to go behind enemy lines, to go unseen, undetected, and to operate, without support, without connection to the outside, and conduct your mission. I think Jesus did exactly that. He dropped in behind enemy lines in the incarnation, in his birth. He came down to enemy territory, which certainly this world is, and then he went into hiding for 30 years, remaining unseen and undetected, for many at least. And then he comes out on the scene. He comes out. He recruits and trains his own squad of soldiers. And he trains them, teaches them. He makes enemies, certainly, and then he gives his life on the objective to rescue humanity.
Getting some fresh perspective on Jesus, looking at his life, his mission as an airborne ranger, and getting it from firsthand from a U.S. Army chaplain and a veteran, both Iraq and Afghanistan. Captain John McDougall is my guest today. And he has served in the airborne and ranger assignments for the past 10 years or so, and we're talking to him from Afghanistan. And we're going to continue in a moment and sort of open up the book and get some more of those wonderful metaphors and parallels and insights as we learn more about our Savior. And as the subtitle says, Find Your Purpose, Following the Warrior Christ. All that's yet to come here on today's Connecting Faith.
Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired Encore presentation.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, talking today with U.S. Army Chaplain John McDougall, who's a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan and has served assignments with the 173rd Airborne Brigade, the 82nd Airborne Division, the 75th Ranger Regiment, and has written a wonderful book called Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger, Find Your Purpose Following the Warrior Christ. And right at the opening of the book, Captain, you reference the old gospel song, Do Lord. In fact, it's apparently it was a marching song at one time. Just say a little bit about that one.
Yeah, the title, exactly. The title comes from a ranger cadence, if you will, and it was sung to the melody of Do Lord. And there was a number of verses, some of them not clean enough to share on your show, certainly. But they took in this song, they took a number of biblical characters and showed how they fit in the military metaphor. Jesus was an airborne ranger. Jesus led a 12-man fire team. Jonah was a scuba diver. Moses led a water crossing. So that all these kinds of ideas were a part of this song that was sung in the ranger community.
Well, every time I hear it now, I'm thinking of you and the men that you serve with. So it was effective for me, and hopefully as people hear it, they'll be reminded of it as well, and certainly to pray and remember their sacrifice. So let's talk about, you mentioned kind of just highlighting sacrifice, but you lay out the book in a number of different ways, sort of the core principles of the Ranger Creed, but really maybe it's core principles of military service as well. Let's just unpack a few of those.
Yeah, certainly the foremost one would be service above self and sacrifice for a greater cause. I think every soldier in uniform, everyone that's ever worn the uniform or wears the uniform today, understands that my life might be required of me, that I might give my life on behalf of this nation, and certainly many have and many continue to do just that. And I think that's exactly the life that Jesus led and the principle that Jesus lived by. I think so many soldiers, whether of Christian faith or not, can resonate with John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, that he lays down his life for his friends. And Jesus not only spoke that truth, but then he carried it out a week later as he gave his life on Golgotha for us.
One of the challenges, I guess, that I was thinking about as I read the book, that Rangers really represent kind of the cream of the crop, right? These are the best of the best. I mean, that was sort of how they were designed, right? And so what do you say to maybe believers who feel like, well, I don't really measure up to be a part of this this elite team?
You know, that's a great point. Certainly, Jesus represents the best of the best. He represents the very best of humanity. And the good news is, he doesn't call, unlike the airborne rangers of today that really just call the elite the very best, he calls everyone to service. And I think we can find encouragement looking at the 12 men he called in his original ranger squad. These are not the intellectual elite. These were not the spiritual elite. In many ways, these were kind of the leftovers. These were fishermen and tax collectors. These were zealots. They were folks that didn't fit in the spiritual and religious community of the time. They didn't really have anything to offer, so it seemed. And God used them nonetheless. And I think that's true of us today. God is still looking for a few good men, if I could coin the Marine Corps motto. He's still looking for a few good men who are willing to raise their hands and say, I'll serve. I may not have the most to offer, but I'm willing to offer what I have.
You know, maybe we should talk more, too, about the mission in general. I mean, you start out the book talking about the great raid, on mission with Jesus. I mean, do we really understand what this really is about, what the mission actually is? And maybe that's an issue for men and women in the military as well. You need to know the mission, right?
Thank you so much for bringing that to the front. Absolutely right. I think we've lost a sense of mission in our churches, and we start to think that the mission Jesus has called us to is to be nice boys and girls, to go to church, to read our Bibles, to spend some time in prayer, and maybe go to an occasional potluck after church. That's not a mission, and I think men and women certainly understand that. We want to be called to something more. And the Bible is clear. From the very beginning, the enemy has taken prisoners. He's taken all of humanity prisoners. We are effectively POWs, behind enemy lines, held. No hope of rescue, no hope of escape, I should say. And God the Father with the Son, they planned a rescue. And the Son deployed to planet Earth, much like a soldier. He operated unseen and unknown, and he conducted his mission. And his mission goes on still. Certainly, in one way, it was completed at the cross and the empty tomb. But in other ways, his mission continues. And God has called us to join him in that rescue mission, the great raid, as I say in the book. He's called us to join with him and rescue humanity from captivity. Now, if we call ourselves Christians, we've been rescued, but now we have a mission to continue what he's begun.
What does that maybe military mindset look like? If we actually, as the nation back in World War II kind of, rallied around, everybody, we made sacrifices, everybody sort of changed over their manufacturing to work on, war materials. So what would it look like if the church today sort of took on that that mission mindset that says, hey, we're at war here?
Yeah, I think if you look at a couple things, I think on the individual level, it looks there's an intensity that comes with it. You do not meet a ranger that you don't have the word intensity associated with them. They are intense about physical fitness. They are intense about training. They are intense about their role in combat. And they're very, very, very good at what they do. And I think there would be an intensity, not a lackadaisical, oh, I've got my ticket to heaven and I'm just waiting for him to come back, bless the Lord. But an intensity that says, I only have so many days left on this earth, and I don't know how many, but I need to be getting after the mission that God has sent me to do. I think there's an intensity in terms of our study. God, I need to know more of your word so I can be prepared for battle, just as you were when you faced off against Satan in the wilderness. So that's an individual level. I think on a more corporate and community level, we need to be a sending church. The word apostle means sent one, and we are called to be apostles, just as rangers are sent to go out and deploy and do the mission they've been called to do. Christians are not called to sit in churches. Christians are called to go out into our communities, into our neighborhoods, and throughout the world, and be not just evangelists, not just spreading the good news, but also confronting the evil that we see in the world.
Say a little bit more about the training aspect of this, because I'm thinking that maybe there's a point or two in the training process when a ranger is maybe more susceptible to failure, or because the stakes are high, so we want the best. So talk about some parallels and application for us in terms of the training we need to really understand the high stakes.
I think the biggest thing I would say about our training is that it is corporate. No ranger trains alone, nor does he deploy alone. And I think too often in our Christianity, we've kind of said, well, this is an individual faith. This is my personal relationship with my Lord and Savior. And while that's true, we are not called to fight as individuals. We're called to fight as members of teams, just as rangers are. And as you look at the training model, from the very first day that a ranger steps off the bus in basic training, he's going to have senior folks who are training him and teaching him. And his job is to emulate the example of his supervisors and his leaders. And Jesus did the same thing with his disciples. He set an example, and they watched and they followed. So certainly I think we can watch and follow the example of Jesus. We can watch and follow the example of saints who've gone before us. And then we can lock arms with our brothers and sisters to our left and right and say, I'm headed into battle. Will you come with me?
Which, again, the band, the military has been kind of known as a band of brothers, I guess, for some time. Maybe talk about the lessons that we learn about, spiritual life through brotherhood. We are a pretty individualistic society.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I think that we have this image of going it alone, that the Lone Ranger, maybe something we picked up from John Wayne films about the lone man on horseback. That's just not consistent with the ranger culture or the airborne culture, and it ought not be consistent with the Christian culture either. As Jesus sent out his disciples, he sent them out in pairs, and then we see Paul follow that same example when he went out. He went out first with Barnabas and then with Silas, and so we see this idea of team. That men and women are called to step up alongside one another and to fight for our families, our neighborhoods, our communities, and the world around us.
You're a graduate of West Point. Military service. There's basic training. You complete that. You go on to the next level. And there's always sort of a stage there where there's a stop and a recognition or a commissioning before you go on. Just what would that look like maybe in our churches today if we were actually commissioning each other to further service?
I think we've seen it in our churches. We see it all too rare, though. Occasionally, we'll have someone's family come forward and we'll commission them. Maybe they'll be missionaries, maybe in another part of the world, or maybe another part of the U.S., where we are saying, hey, we as a church are sending you out. And I think we that's the exception, not the rule. And I really think we ought to bring families forward and say, hey, we're commissioning the Joneses to their workplace here in our city. We're commissioning him as he goes out to his workplace. We're commissioning her. We're commissioning the kids. This family is saying, here am I, Lord, send me. And I think that's the reality that every soldier realizes, whether they're Rangers, whether they find themselves in the front lines, or whether they find themselves supporting from the rear. Everybody is commissioned to perform a task in the Army, and the Christian church should be no different.
What was it like for you just sort of to get that commission, to have graduated from West Point? I mean, that's a significant step, but what did that commissioning mean to you, maybe personally? Say, all right, I've accomplished something, or I'm just at the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely, Neil. It's both and. It's wow, I made it, I finished. This was difficult 4 years, the training and the evaluations, but it is just the beginning, and it represents a conveyance of authority. You are now a commissioned officer, and there are responsibilities and duties associated with that. And I really think it should be the same way in our Christian life. We don't just say, whew, I made it, I'm a Christian now, my soul is saved, and it's done. In one sense, it's done. In another sense, it's just begun. God is calling us to activity. He's calling us to participate in the great raid. He's commissioned us. He's deputized and authorized us to act on his behalf. And we need to realize that and do just that.
We're talking today with Captain John McDougall, who is a U.S. Army chaplain and a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan. He graduated from West Point in 2000. He served over 10 years in airborne and ranger assignments, including the 173rd Airborne Brigade, the 82nd Airborne Division, the 75th Ranger Regiment. He has written, Jesus was an airborne ranger. The subtitle is Find Your Purpose, Following the Warrior Christ. And we're getting some fresh perspective again, just understanding Jesus' mission and the assignment that he's given us. We've got some copies of this wonderful little book to give away, Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger. And if you'd like to be a part of the drawing for that, I invite you to just go to our website, myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. And then click on the Connecting Faith show page. You'll find an email link right there. If you just give us your contact information, it will put you in the drawing for this great resource. And we're going to talk more with Captain John McDougall in just a moment as we continue on Connecting Faith and get a little bit more about his story and learn more about, things like the line of departure and the op ord and a number of military acronyms that you and I probably don't use every day, but have some important meaning for us. So stay tuned for more here on Connecting Faith.
Thanks for being with us for this encore presentation of the best of Connecting Faith. We're back with more in just a moment.
To do nothing. That's a powerful title for a powerful book co-written by my guest today, Shane Moore. She wrote it with Kim Yim. They are abolitionist mamas. The subtitle is Finding Your Power to Abolish Modern-Day Slavery. It's a reality, sadly, with literally millions around the globe enslaved in sex trafficking or slave labor or just any number of areas where they're exploited. And we're talking about the steps that we can take, just average moms, soccer moms like Shane Moore, who is a trained ER chaplain and shares through speaking and writing. She's also a member of the World Vision Speakers Bureau. She has written Global Soccer Mom, Changing the World is Easier Than You Think. And this is a passion of hers as well about human trafficking. We've got some copies of the book, Refuse to Do Nothing, to give away. And you can be part of that drawing for those copies by calling us at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-93-FAITH. Shane, when we get to that place maybe where we say, All right, I want to refuse to do nothing. I want to learn more. Is that the first step, just to become aware, or what's the first place to start, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Educate yourself, you know, and there are a lot of really great places where you can do that. As you stated earlier, Polaris Project is a great resource. It will give you statistics on what is happening globally and domestically with human trafficking. There's other great organizations like International Justice Mission that also have a lot of toolkits and really, really great accessible information to educate yourself. You know, the other thing is to, as we just mentioned, is to know the human trafficking hotline number, which is 888-3737-888. Those are great places to get started. And then from there, it's just using your influence. I mean, our book is Finding Your Power to Join the Abolitionist Movement. And we map out three different ways that you can do that, that you have power as a consumer, what you choose to purchase. You have power of advocacy, putting pressure on lawmakers. But really one of the most important ones is that you have power in your relationships and in the spheres of influence that you have in your life.
Say more about maybe just each of those. Let's talk about the consumer first and, some of the realities that we pick up our phones every day, or maybe we're eating chocolate here after Halloween. But those are just a couple of examples of consumables that might have a difficult supply chain.
Yeah, you know, there's an app called Slavery Footprint. So if you're into that, if you're someone who really likes their apps on their phone, there's this really cool app, and it's called Slavery Footprint, and you can actually type in a company and get a report on if their supply chain is slave free. Is human trafficking slave free. And again, this is a very complicated, nuanced issue. You know, it's very difficult for us, you know, sitting in our little grocery stores in our town to look at a huge wall of products and think we can decide on the moment, you know, what if those supply chains are free. And so I would just say, about being a consumer, don't stress out about it, A. B, start to educate yourself. You know, go to slaveryfootprint.org, get the app, you know, and start educating yourself on what corporations are really clean. You know, Apple, it has a great reputation. Gap has a great reputation. You know, some of the ones that don't are like Hershey. Hershey produces chocolate in the Ivory Coast on cocoa plantations that are, like, just known for having these young boys that are just kind of taken. And the sad thing is, usually they're taken by it would remind you a lot of what happens to the gangs in our urban centers in America, where it's very often the gangbangers, the older teen gangbangers who were brought in when they were exploited, are now perpetuating the exploitation and are building the gangs. And that's what these guys do. They were brought in at maybe 10 or 11, but they've grown up on these plantations, and then they're sent out to get more labor. And it's absolutely human trafficking. These young boys, these young girls, they are not paid. They live in very poor situations. If the youngest ones are always the bottom of the barrel getting food, they're obviously not educated. It's a bad situation. And Hershey and other huge, agro corporations know the situation, and, you know, they say they're working to fix it. And as consumers, that's a no-brainer to keep putting pressure to be like, you need to fix it.
I was thinking probably we get, I hadn't really thought about it, but in the book you mentioned even the door-to-door magazine sales, some of those things, I mean, that could be, there could be some trafficking aspects of that too, right?
Yeah, you know, that happens to me here outside of Chicago all the time. You know, these men, kind of like older teens, early 20s, will be at my door, and they're always in clothes that don't, I mean, this is what I'm saying, is recognize the signs. Like, if something is off, pay attention. They're not clean. Their teeth aren't brushed. They're in clothes that don't really fit them. They're, like, oversized, and they're dirty. And they, like, have one, like, little black, like, leather packet that I think I've seen, like, four different men have. You know, and they're trying to sell something that's very elusive, you know, and I, what I've come to do, and I have other friends who do this, is I write that human trafficking number down on a post-it note, and I just write, you know, if you need help or if you need to get out of your situation, call this number. And I hand it to them, And, you know, and that's a very simple thing that I can do where I'm not putting myself or my family in danger. I'm not hiding out in my house and not answering the door, you know, but I'm also not getting into this huge conversation with someone that I don't know, and I don't know, you know, if someone's watching or, you know, what's going on. So, you know, that's a really easy, tangible thing you can do, you know, where you are offering a lifeline to someone.
Let's take a call here. Vicki, call in from Janesville and is part of a anti-trafficking group. Vicki, welcome. You're on with Shane Moore. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. My question is about, I don't know, ways to encourage and then maintain community and church awareness and involvement in the anti-trafficking movement. You know, I find that people will get excited about it and they'll want to do something, but then over time it sort of cools down and they tend to lose interest. So a little frustrating.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. You know, here outside of Chicago, I myself and a couple other people, we started this thing called the West Chicagoland Anti-Trafficking Coalition, and we have a Facebook page. You can find us there. But, you know, we sit and have meetings about the same thing, you know, and it is always going to probably be a small core group of devoted people, right? Isn't that the story, you know, that are the cement of these kind of movements? But I can tell you some of the things that we have done is we've hosted film screenings, and you can do that at a community center or a home. There's tons of documentaries out there, you know, that takes pressure off of you of having to supply a ton of information. It's usually in these films, like Call and Response is a great one, and there's a lot out there. You know, we've also had these things that we call mixers, where we invite different people who are engaged in the human trafficking, you know, whether it's we've had a Homeland Security person come speak. We actually had our representative, Peter Roskam, we had him come to one of our mixers. And, you know, they're just, we've tried to keep it, kind of social, right? So it's because people are also still getting to know one another. You know, and then a lot of people on our coalition really have a heart to get the churches in the community talking to each other, which I also really think helps with keeping the momentum and the interest alive in the congregations. And so we actually have liaisons that try to touch base with all of the different, you know, pastors and kind of planning events like that together. But, you know, it is hard to be that organized, especially if it's a group of, you know, just good-hearted volunteers. So I feel your pain, but, you know. But I would definitely, I would keep it fun, too. I mean, some of my friend, my co-author Kim in Southern California, she does these things called Wine and Sign, where they have, like, a wine party, and then they sign cards telling their legislators that they want certain, you know, bills passed. So, you know, whatever makes sense for your community, I would also, you know, keep it, you know, make it fun, too. I know that sounds weird. You're dealing with such a heavy topic, but, you know, you need, like you said, you need that encouragement and you need momentum.
Well, we talked about, you know, finding your power, your place. You talked about, you know, as a consumer, as an advocate, and also in relationships. So maybe just expand on, you know, more on maybe relationships and advocacy as well. Talk more about those two aspects, maybe some tangible things we can do. Maybe you've sort of addressed that. Obviously, you know, find some like-minded people is an important thing. But how do we use our relationships to help fight this?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of touched on it, you know, in my last answer. But, yeah, it's that idea that we really do have these spheres and these networks of influence, you know. And, you know, like our West Chicagoland Anti-Trafficking Coalition, we made a Facebook page, and we just started sharing from that and just spreading our influence and sharing what we were doing and sharing the books we were reading or sharing, like, we'll get together for prayer, you know, and just, you know, we would just share and reach out. But also just those one-on-one, do not underestimate the one-on-one conversations with your mom, you know, with your, you know, maybe your mom tells her friend, and then they invite you to their book club or their Bible study. I mean, don't underestimate how all of these small conversations and these small networking of, you know, just educating and keep, you know, moving forward. It really does create a movement, and it does create change.
In terms of advocacy, are there things that maybe have the most impact? I mean, so for example, connecting with your local representative, or even, you know, writing to, you know, someone like Representative Smith or something, is that going to make a big difference?
Those things make make a huge difference, you know, and I was never really involved with the legislative process until my heart really broke over some of these global justice issues. And, you know, they're real people. So you can, did you know you can get to know your congressman and your state, you know, your state representatives? I mean, they have office hours and you just call and you make an appointment and you go in and you sit down. And I mean, that stuff makes a huge difference. They work for you. You sit there and you say, my heart is breaking over human trafficking and we need really strong laws. And what are you doing about this issue? And then suddenly their ears perk up of my constituency cares about human trafficking. Quick, what are we doing? You know, I mean, it matters. And talking to them face-to-face is by far the best thing you can possibly do, you know. And the next best thing is to call, and then the next thing would be to write. But actually, you can actually get to know them.
Hmm. You know, I was wondering, you have, three children. I know as you said, your heart has been broken on this for several years. The book, Refuse to Do Nothing, came out, I think, a couple of years ago, probably. Talk about maybe how you involved your kids in this this area of concern.
Well, I'll tell you what my co-author Kim did. One Halloween, anything that came from Hershey, she made her kids throw it all away on Halloween. And that was like, there was great crying and high drama over that. So I don't know if you want to go that route, you know, you could go that route. But I do think that, yes, absolutely constantly having the conversations with your kids. I have taken my children to like the different film screenings, you know, because it's a tough topic too. So, you know, as moms and dads, you need to discern how much you're going to get into it, especially with the sex trafficking and what's the appropriate age with all that, you know. But I have my kids have come to events with me. I love the Justice Conference, you guys. It's all now every year. It's in Chicago, and that's those are great venues to bring kids to. I mean, there's just worship, and you're just surrounded by so many people who are on the front lines doing amazing things, and it's so much information and exposure to things like that. And I've had friends do book clubs where for kids. So it's the teenagers will all be reading a book or like a mother-daughter book club where they're all reading the same book and talking about the same issues. So there's a lot of creative ways to involve your kids.
Mm. We're talking with Shane Moore. Shane is a mom and an advocate on behalf of the fight against human trafficking and other global concerns, fighting injustice. Finding Your Power to Abolish Modern-Day Slavery is the subtitle of the book that she co-wrote with Kim Yim, called Refuse to Do Nothing. It came out from University Press here a while back, and we've got several copies more to give away. We'll do a drawing here at the end of the hour. You can sign up for that and maybe use it as a starting point for expanding your influence in the fight against human trafficking. Get some great resources there and lots of good tips. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number to connect with us. 877-933-2484. You sign up for the book.
We're back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired Encore presentation.
You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we're honored to have connected today with Captain John McDougall, talking to him from a base in Afghanistan. He's a U.S. Army chaplain, a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan. He's a ranger and has written a wonderful book called Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger, Finding Your Purpose, Following the Warrior Christ. Chaplain, I'm interested in maybe how your life and routine maybe changes from being at home to being deployed in a war zone and in harm's way really every day, and if there's some lessons that maybe we can apply as well as you've even thought about writing this book.
How does my routine change? Well, certainly there's the absence of my family. I think that's foremost in deployed soldiers' minds, is that we're here without our loved ones. But I think that certainly drives us closer to one another. We spend a lot of time side by side with our brothers. In fact, really, you could say 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we're with our brothers in arms. I think one of the insights I could share with your listeners is that every ranger has a different function. Not every ranger goes out on target looking for bad guys. We have a number of intel analysts that are evaluating information and trying to ascertain where the enemy might be. We have obviously commanders who are making decisions. We have cooks and mechanics. We have chaplains, obviously. We have behavioral health and medical personnel. So we have a number of people that make up this team. And I think the key is that we need everybody. We need certainly those guys that go out and target looking for bad guys, but we need all those support structures as well that enable that individual to fight. I think the same is true in our Christian life. Not every one of us is going to deploy overseas as a missionary. Not every one of us is going to become a pastor or go to seminary. But all of us are called to be active in the fight. And we're all called to contribute the skills and talents, abilities, the proximity that God has given us, where he has placed us, that is, to conduct the mission he's called us to do.
Chaplain, what's a typical day, maybe for you and for the Ranger regiments that you're serving? And is there a way that we could pray more specifically for you and particularly for the men and women that are deployed today?
Yeah, I mean, typical days, I guess it's hard to say that they vary based on mission requirements, but I can assure you we're well taken care of. We have access to great gym facilities, which is an important part of our physical fitness. We have access to great dining facilities where we're able to get our three meals a day. We have access to great morale resources, phones and internet, so we can stay connected with our families. I think obviously one way people always think to pray is to pray for our physical safety. And then certainly please do pray for that. Please pray that God will continue to protect us until we can return home. Pray for wisdom for our leaders who are navigating this difficult environment. Somewhere between war and peace is where we're at right now. And we pray for wisdom as they navigate the political elements of this conflict. And then please pray for our families too. They bear a heavy load when we're gone, when we're far from home. Our wives become both mother and father to children. They're trying to manage household finances. As my wife would say, that when you're gone is always when the car breaks down and the washing machine breaks down and that the roof is leaking. That's everything happens when the soldiers are gone. So please pray for our families as well.
One of your responsibilities, obviously, as a chaplain, is to visit the families of fallen soldiers. Say a word about maybe what you say in those situations and how we might, non-military people, might look at this day more soberly, perhaps.
Yeah, certainly. Boy, I've had, unfortunately, more opportunities to meet with the families of our fallen soldiers than I would like to. And they all vary. They vary based on the faith of that family, and they vary based on the circumstances of their death. But certainly you want to provide them hope. You want to provide them a sense of God's presence and God's peace. You want to provide them a sense of purpose, that their loss wasn't in vain, that there's meaning to this loss. But more than anything, as a minister, you just want to listen. You want to be there. Paul says in Romans that we are to rejoice with those who rejoice, and mourn with those who mourn. And sometimes you're just sitting in silence with them. No need for cliches or catchy phrases. No need to quote scripture necessarily, unless they're people of faith. Just let them grieve. And I would say, as we think about it, just remember the cost. I think we go back to John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, that he lays down his life for his friend. Certainly we see that in conflict even today. But we certainly see that in the life of Christ, the warrior Christ, who came to give his life for us.
Chaplain, what's the best part about being a chaplain and maybe the hardest part of your duty?
Oh, great question. I would say the best part is I get to live, eat, sleep, work out. I get to be amongst these people that I serve. I think it's difficult for a pastor who loves his congregation when they're with him, but then they scatter out to their businesses and their homes, and he may not see them for a week. I get to be with my guys 5 days a week at home and 7 days a week here, and I get to know them. I get to know their personal lives. I get to know their favorite thing at the dining facility. I get to know a lot about them, and that gets to be a bridge for me to share the gospel. Some of the challenging things is certainly trying to be, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians, trying to be all things to all men, that by all means possible I might save some. And there are times when someone comes to me and the first words out of their mouth are, "Sir, I'm not I'm not much of a religious person, but I need someone to talk to, and to be that counselor, to be that listening ear, to bring the hope of Christ to them in a way that they would be receptive. We always want to bring them to Jesus, but not everyone's ready for that. So to be that listening ear, to be that supportive shoulder to lean on, even for those people who don't share your faith.
What did your family think early on when you decided to pursue a military career?
You know, my family was incredibly supportive. It was funny. My father was a military man, served in Vietnam, and so he also loved military history. And so when I told him I was interested in West Point, he was thrilled. Just all the history and the people he started quoting to me, you know, Pershing and Patton and Eisenhower and MacArthur, all the men who went to West Point. And it took my mom a while to catch on. She didn't know where West Point was or what all this life entailed. But over the years, she's done a great job of grasping what it is I do. I think that the call to chaplaincy divided some in my family. There were some who thought, well, this seems like a waste of a good career to leave the infantry, to leave this trajectory you're on and pursue the ministry. And there were others who said, you know what? I understand this. I understand the calling to serve God and country and appreciate that. So it's been quite a journey.
And, you know, I think we always like to know, be encouraged by the morale of our troops. What's your assessment of the soldiers that you're surrounded by?
They're very proud of what they do. Sometimes they're frustrated that they don't get to do more, but they're very proud of what they do, and they're very well trained. They're passionate about their contribution to this fight, and that's wonderful to see. That's all you could ask for as a chaplain is that the guys are looking forward to their participation, whatever the country asks them to do.
Got just a minute or so left. We're talking about the book Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger, Find Your Purpose, Following the Warrior Christ, written by Captain John McDougall, U.S. Army chaplain and veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan. And at the end of each chapter, you have a little after-action review. And, John, I mean, this really is an opportunity for us to dig a little deeper and not just to read another book, but actually take our faith to the next level.
Absolutely right. And I would say that, you know, if you read this book by yourself, that's great. I think there's wonderful truths you can glean from it. But I think like Rangers who are always training in groups and squads and teams and platoons, I would encourage you to read this book with someone else and ask those questions to each other. How are we doing? How are we doing as a church? And how am I doing as an individual answering the call that God has on my life to be engaged in this global rescue mission? Am I answering his call? When he comes back, as we say in Matthew 25, will he say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been a faithful soldier. You've deployed and you've done everything I've asked you to do." That's what I want to hear.
Well, get ready to see Jesus like you've never seen him before, a battle-scarred leader who stared death in the face and won. Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger is the title of the book, written by Captain John McDougall, U.S. Army chaplain. And, sir, we thank you for your service. We're honored to spend some time with you today and just grateful for the fact that you're there sharing the gospel in a variety of ways among your soldiers. So keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger, the title of the book. We've got some copies to give away, and you can sign up for it online. We'll do an online drawing. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page to sign up for that, and hopefully you'll find this a great encouragement to you. Talking today with Chaplain John McDougall, Captain of the U.S. Army Chaplain, a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan today on Connecting Faith.
And this has been an encore presentation of the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk with you again soon.